The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. On June 7th, the Seattle City Council's Housing, Health, Energy, and Workers' Rights Committee got an update on the Heroin and Prescription Opiate Addiction Task Force recommendations. Loyal listeners may recall that way back in September of 2016, that task force recommended that Seattle and King County set up community health engagement locations, a fine euphemism for a safe consumption space or supervised injection facility. The person testifying is Jeff Sakuma from the mayor's office. He's a member of that task force. Nearly 2 years later, and they are still talking about it. You know, rather than me rant, let's just get straight to it.
As has been mentioned, overdose deaths continue to rise. That the recommendations, and I think that this is a really important piece, from the task force are being implemented, and that we are expanding our prevention work and our treatment work. And something that I would point out is even though the recommendations did come out 20 months ago, part of that was that we really needed, in order for to move the child work forward, if you will, that we really needed to be very clear about our commitment to expanding treatment. So that is part of the timeline in this, is to really make sure that people understand that there are treatment options open, so that when we do open a cell, that people who too choose to move into treatment, we can get them into that treatment rapidly.
Jeff, thank you so much. And I'm, again, thankful to you and Brad Feingood and the others that were on the opioid task force. Now, when you were here last time, I think Brad mentioned that there are over 40 treatment facilities available where people can go and get access to buprenorphine. Can you talk about, as you're going through this, how those differ from what you're talking about?
Sure. I think, yeah, so we could, obviously Brad isn't here today, and he's the one that has the expertise on the very specifics, and he did sort of talk about them last time that he was here, but I will kind of just review sort of the numbers again, if you will. And also, just as a reminder, I know that every time we speak to this issue, that there are new people who are sort of watching and listening. And so to also remind everyone that the task force made eight different recommendations in the prevention, treatment, and user health areas, and that a community health engagement location was one of those recommendations. And this is all part of a really important package. So this gets to what you were just talking about, Councilmember Bagshaw, and that is what's been happening in terms of treatment and user health expansion in King County. And again, I think that Brad and Dr. Duchin sort of did talk about this last time that they were here, and that in 2017, that there was the new detox facility that was opened up on Beacon Hill, a very important piece of the treatment system, that there are 40 new access points for buprenorphine, that there are 10 new outpatient treatment on-demand agencies providing services to people in our county, and this is county data. We don't break it down sort of we can get the city specific, but this is county data. And then really importantly, that we have put out, you know, 8,700 naloxone kits in the community, which also helped to prevent overdoses in our community. So I kind of want to kind of get to the headline here around community health and engagement location. As you know, the last time we had a discussion, we did part of it was the presentation of the SLI, where we did outline sort of what we had looked at in terms of options for a community health engagement location. And along with that, we sort of outlined the potential costs for those, each of those options. So the work that we have been doing really has been looking at a couple of those options that had us looking internally, if you will, to city and county-owned properties. When we began to look at all the various options, that we realized that the city doesn't own a lot of buildings, if you will, and the buildings that we do own oftentimes are community centers or park-related centers, and obviously those would not be appropriate types of building sites. So we have kind of exhausted what we have looked at and determined that there wasn't anything truly viable to move forward if we wanted to move forward sort of quickly, if you will.
And Jeff, on this issue of location, when you say none available or appropriate, I think the appropriate piece is really important to emphasize. You know, we just talked about some of the community conversations that we have across the city, but really when we think about appropriate locations, it's not going to be somewhere in District 5 perhaps, it's going to be in an area where we're already seeing high rates of overdose and death.
Yes.
And so when you looked at locations, I assume you were really looking at locations that were accessible directly in areas where people are frankly already using, and we're trying to prevent deaths and use outside. Is that correct?
That's correct. So we were been really focusing on the overdose and overdose response data that that we have, both from obviously from the county and as to location of a death outside, as well as the SFD data around sort of response to overdoses outside. And then again, the outside piece is really important just because we understand that a community health engagement location would be there mostly for individuals, not entirely, but mostly for individuals who are currently using in public settings, outside bathrooms, other types of settings. And it's really that group of folks that we want to bring inside and ensure that they're safe, because oftentimes when they're doing engaging in injecting drugs or using drugs in the bathrooms and, you know, other types of areas, in that they're doing so alone as well. And so it's really those individuals that we'd like to continue to focus. So that's correct. So we know sort of generally where the majority of that activity happens. We know that the majority of that activity happens sort of in the downtown corridor down through the Soto a district. We know that there is that activity occurs up on the West Capitol Hill area. So we understand sort of generally where the areas that we really do want to focus on, and that's what we've done.
Yeah, Jeff, just following up on that really quickly, do we actually have the data and maybe a map, heat map, that could say, you know, 23 here, 64 here, that kind of thing? Because I think as we're talking with the community, to be able to say, hey, look, the problem's already here. We're not bringing people to you. The problem is here. Let's get them inside. Yeah. So if you could do that for us, then we've got that data.
Absolutely.
To go back.
Yeah, there is a heat map. I know that Caleb has presented that heat map in different settings, but
it would just be helpful to have it in our hands.
I think that just to sort of bring back the conversation we were having before about the community, I think that will be a helpful tool as we talk about where this is going to possibly be a benefit to the community, where we can prevent deaths and overdose, are our places that might be very welcoming of a site like this. We just heard testimony that Capitol Hill friends have asked us to consider how we might provide assistance up there. I'm looking forward to touching base with them and getting some context so that we can do some outreach, because again, I think this is, according to your slide here, this is going to require us to reach out and have partnerships with either nonprofits, our religious community, or the business community to help us identify a location.
Absolutely. This, as you will see, this is definitely having us work with another entity. And obviously the cost of purchasing a property, as you well imagine, can be quite prohibitive in that. You know, I think that if we want to move forward sooner than later, as obviously has been discussed, that we also sort of were not sort of pursuing that area. Let's see. So I think that what we have really, so the other piece that's really important for the background of this is that understanding that if we are potentially are not putting this into an owned city-county property, that we obviously are at risk of having somebody else's property seized just because of our federal government not necessarily seeing this as something that's legal or appropriate. So therefore, what we are, that has really moved us towards is what I'm, this is my term, a fixed mobile option. And what I mean by a fixed mobile option is that it is an option where we would actually lease or go into an agreement regarding a fixed site. And then with that we would have a mobile van. Van is a little bit of a misnomer, as you all know. These are potentially a very large vehicle that we would then house the actual consumption activities in. And that mobile van and that fixed site would be, the van would literally parked right up against a site. I mean, that would be the preference, is something that is really sort of almost adjoined, but obviously two different settings. And therefore, in such a, in that situation, what we do is in the fixed site part is that we'd have the reception and waiting area so that people who are wanting to use, we're not queuing people outside or anything, that we are bringing people inside, if you will, that we are in that indoor setting providing people with other types of services and resources so that we, that if people, including low-barrier buprenorphine, so that if any of those individuals say, today I choose not to inject or use in the van, but instead I really want to consider treatment, that we can, that would be an immediate handoff for any of those individuals. The mobile piece of this would be the place where that people can be using or consuming drugs in that setting, and then also a space that therefore that they don't have to leave until they've been sort of observed for a period of time. So that it would include both sort of the drug injection process as well as the recovery space, if you will.
Question?
And then lastly, just is that this has become such a super important piece of this is that in any of this that we would also be having security and neighborhood mitigation services, that regardless of how much we bring services indoors for the individuals themselves, obviously there will continue to be concerns about the neighborhood, as the security of the neighborhood, about other activities happening in the neighborhood, and so we would definitely want to make sure that we provide a safe area, if you will, not only for obviously the neighbors, but also the individuals who are using as well.
Thank you, Jeff. Do we have a few questions, Councilmember Juarez? No? Okay. So fixed mobile site is, I think, a new term that we should all familiarize ourselves with. And I understand the complexity, given our federal government, the rationale behind why you have coined that term. I know that San Francisco and Philadelphia have also announced plans to move forward with similar concepts around how they can try to find a location for individuals to safely consume substances under the supervision of trained healthcare providers, and more importantly, make sure that they have immediate access to other health services as well. So it's truly wraparound. And I appreciate the courage that I think Seattle, San Francisco, and Philadelphia are showing here. And I know that we have many potential new challenges now that were not maybe anticipated 2 years ago when this report was originally drafted. But I think that this being one tool among the eight that were recommended back then, in addition to the concept of a fixed mobile site, provide at least us with a better vision of how this may work. Only in, it sounds like, those certain neighborhoods you're talking about. And when you say same location every day, it also sounds like the concept here would be to almost have potentially a pilot, right? A pilot location instead of an actual roaming.
Absolutely. Thank you for pointing that out. I sort of skipped over that point, but I did sort of put it up on the slide here, and that is the concept of a same location every day. In other words, that the mobile piece of this is only mobile from a place of parking overnight to place of where it would be located on a daily basis. And so that would be the only mobility that it would have, if you will, that it would go from parking to that same site every day.
Leave at night and go to a secured locked location,
yes,
like what the methadone clinic has down in Airport Way as an example?
Correct. Or like what our mobile medical van has as now. Well. Obviously, these are pretty expensive pieces of equipment, and we want to make sure that they
and
are
the supplies secure. Inside that I assume you don't want to leave overnight.
Yeah, though, you know, with a safe injection site, there probably wouldn't, you know, obviously people are bringing in their own, whatever they're using, they're bringing in their own. But again, but for the security of the whole vehicle, absolutely.
You're listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We are listening to audio from a Housing, Health, Energy, and Workers' Rights Committee of the City of Seattle's City Council. They are getting an update on heroin and prescription opiate addiction task force recommendations that were made almost 2 years ago. The person testifying is Jeff Sakima from the mayor's office. He's a member of that task force. The chair of the committee that we're hearing is Teresa Moqueda. And one of the other city council members who we're hearing a bit from is Deborah Juarez. Now let's get back to that hearing.
Jeff, I know we talked about the Chell siting factors. And, you know, thank you, Mayor Executive, for the memo that outlined the four. Mm-hmm. And I know that we had looked at the study. So let me just be candid. Is this, I mean, are we looking for like a unicorn here? I mean, at some point, I mean, I've seen areas where there have been siting factors that were much more intense and egregious than these four that we were able to find land. Granted, it was a different issue, but when I look at the map of the city, it looks like a Chell site. Looks like it probably would end up south of the Ship Canal. And again, going back to what Councilmember Bagshaw said, you're going to want to put it in that service area to capture where people are. And quite frankly, when I look at the factors or limitations, as you call them, mm-hmm. What is the executive's position, or what is the strategic thinking? How to, if you will, overcome, whether you call them factors or limitations? I'm frustrated that it's like, well, there are four factors here. I'm sorry, five, and we just can't find it. We just can't find a perfect spot that meets all these. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to kind of throw up our hands and say, well, we can't. We can't find anything. We can't use existing city property. We can't use existing county property. We can't lease. We can't buy. I mean, what's the bottom line? I know we wouldn't ask Seattle Public School to lease some of their property, whether or not we could explore with the port their property. What is going to be the executive's response to this?
Big parking lot?
I mean, at this point, it's like, and I apologize, I'm not trying to take it out on you, because I know we've been looking at each other for 2 years now. So I just want you to be
like everything.
Yeah,
oh, good.
Yeah. Which, yeah, and doctor, all the doctors too, the two Jeffs. What is, just be straight with me. What are we going to do about this?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, it does narrow sort of our options greatly. But, and I do think that the most important piece going forward is going to be finding a willing partner, and that partner is a partner who owns a piece of property that is willing to work with us. So I think that will be sort of the key to this. But it may be due to my over-optimism on this subject and in life, but I just think that we just need to be, as we begin to move forward and figuring out sort of the next light around how we're going to continue to pay for this, is that is something that, you know, that we just need to go out there and do our best work in trying to find that partner.
Okay, well, let me follow up.
That's not a great answer,
no, it's
I know,
not, but that's okay. I understand.
My optimism isn't a guarantee. I understand.
Let me just be again straight with you in candid.
Okay.
We have like $500,000, is that correct? How much money do we have?
Well, so that gets to this next slide
okay,
here
I know, but
that
just,
we can talk about.
Just so I can finish this question with you, and we can go to the next slide.
Okay.
So I know what the county, what does the city have to cite this?
Yeah, so we have, right now, we have the funding to potentially buy the van, which will cost between, you know, somewhere between $350,000 and $400,000. We have the $1.3 million that the council has put in proviso.
Right, that's what Councilmember Johnson and I did.
Yes, absolutely.
So now you're looking at what?
Yeah, so we're looking at, again, up here, it says about $1.8 million that we are currently working, that we have to work with. That's one-time funding to try to put something into place.
Does that include operating costs?
No. It would only include operating costs if we don't exhaust all of that money. And the operating obviously isn't ongoing. These are one-time funds, though, so it would only move towards whatever we could.
I don't want you to go in the weeds, because I know you got a whole chart, and I know we're going to go into that. We'll get there. Okay. I just want a straight answer. Can we not just buy a piece of property or build brick and mortar and do this? Because what we're finding in the last 2 years, we have 7 districts, and not everyone is a willing district or neighborhood with open arms. Whatever we think about that, the point is we don't have that. Mm-hmm. And the one that we do have, which maybe is District 2, there are all these limitations because of space and schools that don't line up with the 5 limitations or whatever we want to call them. So it seemed to me that if I were in charge, I would just say, I need more money. We need to either just buy our own dang building or build one. Is that ever going to be a conversation we have? I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I read the one-time cost, operating cost, capital cost, but this conversation has been going on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I just... Help me out here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to point out that that Jeff did outline what leasing space would look like, what the challenges are, and we know that there are potential legal challenges, and when we exhaust that process that I think Jeff will describe more in detail later in his presentation, then we can explore these other, the council could explore these other options, such as purchasing a site outright. Of course, one of the big challenges there is if we're considering the 3 areas that are recommended by the task force, Capitol Hill, Belltown, the Pioneer Square area, then we're talking about some fairly expensive pieces of real estate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I really appreciate your sense of urgency, and I also share your frustration. I also think that if we have a known amount for the purchase of a van, potentially being $350,000, that we should move forward with the purchase of that van as we engage with the community about the possible location, and with a reminder that it would be a fixed location. If those dollars are in hand right now, and if I'm reading the information correctly, if that is the most cost-effective and most expedient way for us to create a potential site, I would like to register, in addition to wanting to have the dollars to move forward so that we could either purchase our own property and build brick and mortar. If that's not an option right now, then I would like us to get this van in hand. So I think you hear a sense of urgency for one or the other so we can move forward. I know that you can say you're good. Okay, I just want to do a quick time check. I thought we had a time limitation. We are on the second to last slide, and you've been incredibly helpful in giving us some additional data this time around. I do have some questions about the community engagement section on the one-time cost there. Have you already gone through the slide, or do you have more to say on it?
No, I think that the one really important piece on this slide is that we do not have ongoing operating costs a budget for the ongoing operating cost of a community health engagement location. So I just wanted to be very clear in pointing out in this slide that the ongoing cost, and this is us really working hard with folks at public health to really ask the question, what is it that we absolutely need on the site, and how do we do so in a way that doesn't have such a large dollar attached to it that will become our barrier. So we worked really hard to sort of really bring this down to between $1.5 and $2.5 million on an annual operating basis. The difference there would be the number of days and hours per day of operations. But that is where we are. But that those dollars for ongoing operation costs have not been identified at this point in time. So I just want to be very clear what we are looking at is really trying to secure that those ongoing dollars in order for us to move forward, and that is securing securing with our partners at the county, sort of sharing in those operating costs moving forward.
We've just heard a portion of a hearing before a Seattle City Council committee on the Heroin and Prescription Opiate Addiction Task Force recommendations about establishing a supervised consumption facility, a safe injection space, which in Seattle is referred to as a community health engagement location. It appears that nearly 2 years on, the city of Seattle still has no idea what they are going to do. There are people dying in the streets, in the alleyways, in doorways, in bathrooms, in public libraries, in parks. There are people dying because elected officials cannot pull their thumbs out and they cannot figure out how to save lives. There's an easy solution. Vancouver at the Insight facility, in places around the world, in Australia, in Germany, in the Netherlands. There are dozens of supervised consumption facilities in nations around the world, and they work. They save people's lives. They engage people with the healthcare system, people who may not have contact with the healthcare system. It's being stymied in the city of Seattle because of what's called NIMBYism, not in my backyard. We only became concerned as a society about this opiate overdose crisis because middle-class, middle-aged white people and middle-class young people were dying of opiate overdoses. We only became concerned about this because those very same middle-class people who are raising objections about having a supervised consumption facility are the people whose family members are dropping dead. Now, what are we to make of it when those people don't want to see a harm reduction intervention that could have saved those lives? My God, what has our society become? What is a human life worth? There are other cities around the country that are moving forward with this. Hopefully, Seattle will figure itself out and start trying to save the lives of people who live there. Meanwhile, New York City and San Francisco are both moving forward. I will be hopefully bringing you news about those supervised injection facilities, those harm reduction interventions, very soon. In the meantime, that's all the time we have this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts has a Facebook page, too. Please give it a like and share it with friends. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. And, of course, also at Drug Policy Facts. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. We'll